In the frozen vastness of Antarctica, 1946 marked the launch of one of the largest U.S. naval expeditions ever mounted. Officially, it was a training exercise meant to test equipment and personnel in the most unforgiving climate on Earth. But in the decades since, a storm of conspiracy theories has gathered around the mission, transforming it from a logistical venture into a legend of secrecy and the supernatural. Whispers suggest that Admiral Richard Byrd and his fleet were not merely braving the elements, but confronting something far stranger. Some claim they encountered remnants of a secret Nazi stronghold, where advanced wonder weapons awaited beneath the ice. Others insist Byrd's men stumbled upon flying saucers of extraterrestrial origin, unleashing a clash that ended the expedition months ahead of schedule. Join the Theorist Theorizing as we break through the icy wall of official explanations and probe the chilling possibilities of Operation High Jump.
Easy on what we're talking about right now, because now it's live.
What?
That's all right.
It's fine. We're talking about searching conspiracies in incognito mode.
Yeah.
Everyone searched a conspiracy with a stepmom before. It's
yeah, alien space moms from Mars.
Yeah. Surprised this isn't a stepmom conspiracy episode.
The internet's flooded with stepmom conspiracies.
I don't understand the family stuff. I know it's a step parent, but still, it's fucking weird.
It is weird.
What are you guys up to with that shit?
Yeah. And
can we come up with some different titles for conspiracies?
I don't know. What, can we go back to like shitty like movie remake conspiracies? Those are the
Right? That's what I liked. Yeah.
Yeah, those are great.
Like Pirates of the Caribbean conspiracy.
Yeah.
Were they also like kind of funny to watch?
Yeah, the Seinfeld one was
there
hilarious.
There is a comedic value in those conspiracies.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of conspiracies, you guys ever heard of Operation High Jump?
Fucking love it, dude. Crazy. I love High Jump. I love High Jump.
I don't think we've ever talked about it before.
No?
No, dude, it's been like 10 years since we talked
about it. It's actually been 10 years since we talked about this.
Yeah. I wasn't on it. I had to learn all about this for the first time.
It was actually it was the first time Dan was on the show. Mm. The OG show was Operation High Jump.
Yep.
I forgot about that. I just went and I was like, I wonder what our show sounded like on our original High Jump. And there was Dan.
Yeah.
First time he'd ever done Southeast Asian alien correspondent, Dan.
Yeah. Operation High Jump. 1947, United States launches its largest expedition to the frozen continent of Antarctica. And we have this... the swirling theories about Operation High Jump and this huge undertaking of the United States Navy post-World War II Operation High Jump like kind of starts in like 1938, like all the way to like 1940, a couple years, like 1940 out to 48. Yeah, almost a decade. Like if we look at it from the beginning of, you know, New Schwaben Land up until Admiral Byrd's expedition. So you have this fleet of 13 ships, almost 5,000 Navy personnel, aircraft, different, you know, all kinds of support ships, all of these things coming down to Antarctica for, you know, ostensibly
for science.
They said training, logistics, science, like these reasons are what it's given, to justify this huge, what they said, Navy training exercise, and also, I guess it would be a show of force against the Soviet Union. The Cold War has already started, began 1945 is what the kind of agreed upon date for the start of the Cold War. And so you have these ships going down there. They're supposed to be down there for 2 months. They get, or no, I'm sorry. They're supposed to be down there for like,
what, 6 months, I think.
Or six months. Yeah. They're supposed to be down there for 6 months. And they're only there for two. They, you know, for some reason, this entire fleet has to turn back. And the all of this stuff from these things, as you have all the rumors that they found something down there. It wasn't necessarily that they had to cut this short because of what the you know, what the public is made aware of. Like, yeah, it was too cold. We were we underestimated the difficulty of operating in sub-zero Arctic temperatures. Antarctic.
Insert interrupt, Dan, but it makes total sense why rumors would be swirling around this, right? Like, it's like you said, it's early Cold War. It's fucking early stages post-World War II, right? Like, this is like, and we're starting to kind of get into a little bit more exciting stuff with UFOs and stuff like that. Like, it's like just prime timing for people to like jump to conspiracies when they see something like this happen.
Well, and I mean, too, if you just look at the massive size of
the magnitude,
it's like, dude, 4,700, almost 5,000 military personnel for science.
They've got
an aircraft carrier.
I thought they had two aircraft carriers.
They have combat ready, like aircrafts, like ready to go. Like a lot of the stuff they're bringing down is combat ready. And this is for like, you know, this is to do some mapping and some studies of Antarctica and the region. Right. And like people look at this and just the magnitude of it, they're like, for science, you have all these Navy guys. You're like, all right, boys, suit up. We're teaching you science. We're going down there. And
if you can fucking
change
oil triggers being on my astronauts, you can for sure train fucking Navy men to be scientists. Yeah,
Navy SEALs to be scientists.
Yeah.
I got a note here of 33 aircraft, 4,700 soldiers and 13 ships, including at least one aircraft carrier. The details in the case are a little scrambled, but 13 ships going down to study some ice and some emperor penguins.
Something in that magnitude, you'd immediately think, yeah, these guys are war.
That included submarines as well. Like, they had submersibles as well operating in this thing. The given reasons as to why they went down there, it's not just for science, but this was they were to try and experiment with a lot of like the newer technologies that they were going to have to use. And, you know, they were predicting that they were going to have to use if they went to war, if the US went to war with Russia, and we're going to have to operate in these type of conditions. Like, we were going to be fighting over the Arctic, you know, go down to the Antarctic is the only place that you can really train without kind of setting off, you know, the whole
an actual war.
It's
like,
so
it's
they
the had, last unexplored like region, really.
Yeah. And it's like, it's so, yeah. So there was a lot of that too, as well. So it was an opportunity to go and map out parts of Antarctica that had not been fully mapped yet. Some of the coastlines and some of the interior of Antarctica. There was also, and they also established Little America 4 base.
Yep.
Down there as well. Some of the
real original, like, first of all, this little version of where you're from, and you've come up with that idea three other times. Yeah. That's what I mean. America. It's like, what the fuck? It's stupid. Come up with something cooler than that.
You know, at least they stick to their guns.
It's just easier that way. We don't have to remember a bunch of names. It's just Little America.
The rest of the world is actually just Little America. Mm. They just don't know it yet.
That's German America. We got Canada America above us. The interesting thing that I find about this is that, like, when like looking into this case and like for what they're saying they're gonna go do and like the mapping and stuff, like in comparison, like a decade earlier, like the Nazis were there with like an 87 man crew in one ship doing the same thing and got a lot.
They're getting whale oil. For fucking margarine
for
or some shit,
and but like that's the size difference discrepancy. But they did map some of the coast, so you're like, well, that's interesting that the States is like, you need 87. We're gonna blow that number out of the water. The other thing is that, like we said about the beginning, is like that instantly intrigues me. But I don't believe this was just a science mission. They're like, wrap it up. Is that it? How quickly they turn around. They're like, you know, they cite bad weather, but it's like some reports that they incurred heavy losses on this, of ships, of personnel. Some estimates that I read, up to 1,000 people.
I haven't heard that. Gone. That's crazy.
Right. That was a number.
Yeah, I feel like that's like,
an extreme side. It's like from hundreds. It's from hundreds, but the max number I read is 1,000 people
got official
quarter of your ships.
Right.
That's funny. That's official, half the population of Little America.
Little America 4.
That's like what is it? The official number that they put out there is what? They had like three losses, like three actual personnel losses. Like
was that the dudes in that plane crash?
Yeah. One was the plane crash. Like I think two might've died from there, but like two, most of the guys actually, but people survived that plane crash as well. Yep. Or was said, but 1,000 is like, that's a little difficult. That's a lot of families that you'd have to notify it being like, somehow we lost 1,000 guys down there in Antarctica.
It's 1,000 personnel killed or injured. I should clarify. Wild. That's the biggest number.
Let's say 1,000 victims.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of Nazi flying saucers.
Well,
amongst other things.
And that's
theories.
Mecha Hitler.
And that's where I'm kind of going with the losses is like some of these things are like some of the combat ready, like jets. They lost, right? Well,
so we all know, like, this is a fact. This is a real military operation. Everyone, 100%. We know that. We know we're just post-World War II. We know during World War II, the Nazis were leaps and bounds ahead in aircraft. They had the jet going. And if it wouldn't have been for the dropping of the bomb and the eventual defeat, they would have probably taken over the world. Like they were right there.
If they didn't go into Russia, there's a good chance they win that
one. Oh yeah, we'd be all dressed super sleek right now in some evil uniforms.
And some other stuff that's an absolute fact is even before World War II, because they knew World War, they're probably getting into it. They're anticipating it. They had already been, the Germans had already been down there. New Schwabenland, they call it. And they are trying to set up bases. So
base 211.
Yeah.
Base 211. And we're not going to get too much into that today, but Braden and Dan did do an ATT confidential on Patreon on that. But so we know for sure this is a real military operation. We know for sure that the Germans had been down there multiple times.
Yes.
We know that they had this tech, and then, you know, the Nazi advanced tech conspiracies start running rampant. Mm. Like they had the Nazi bell and they had all this stuff.
The Glocka.
Right on the cusp of putting into the war, and then it was over. But then the theory that goes then, well, a lot in Argentina was a known Nazi sympathizer. A lot of people went down south. Argentina is not far from south or from Antarctica. And that's where the theories start to take root.
Supposedly Argentina, like I just was reading about this, had a large German population pre-World War II.
I've read that too. So yeah. That's probably why it was.
A lot of South American countries actually had like, you know, European, you know, besides Spanish and Portuguese for Brazil, but like a lot of them did have like smaller European countries, like more European communities, like than you'd probably
I don't blame them. Yeah, it is cold here.
Well, the interesting thing about that is like, you know, if you've gone down the conspiracy route, a lot of people say it's like weird to be like in Argentina and then, you know, very South American everywhere, and then you'll just pop out to this like perfect German village,
Little Germany
hills,
4,
and you're just Little Germany 4, and there's these, it's shocking, right? Like you're just like, it's so weird that there's now this like an established community that looks nothing like the rest of the country. Now there was also like reports near the end of the war and like 45 of like U-boats, you know, going to Argentina, right? And then them actually getting collected, like the occupants of those U-boats getting collected by the Allies and questioned, right? And released, which I will never understand because they are Nazis.
Well, we need astronauts. We need people to work at NASA.
Right. And but they're just released back in Archie. You're like, all right, we asked you questions and like we got nothing. It was like they didn't
show us the papers.
They didn't answer. The official report is they didn't give anything in interrogation. I was like, okay. But did they commit war crimes?
Maybe they just,
we don't know.
They just
we don't know.
Fit in right away. They're like, oh, maybe we don't know. Maybe these guys already live here. We already have fucking right? 40 Germans living in this little village.
But you look into that, like they're interrogated. And then within a year, you have the state scrambling for science to come up with this giant science mission to go back to Antarctica and go down there. Part of me wonders, I'm like, did these Nazis that were in these U-boats give the Allies information that led them to believe that Nazis were down there, or they had something in Antarctica that they were like, we need to be battle ready? Because the 4,700 military personnel, 13 shifts that are combat ready. Like a lot of that stuff is combat ready to go for science. Like it's like, it doesn't make sense. But if you look at it in the sense that like, maybe they got tipped off by these U-boats that fled to Argentina, that there was something there. Now all of a sudden you're like, okay, well maybe they're prepared that there might be something there.
Well, I mean, like they were working. We've been working with them already at this point, though, with Operation Paperclip. Mm-hmm. So you think they'd already have that information from the scientists being like, this is where we got it for, whether it's alien technology or ancient civilization technology that they would have discovered while setting up base of 211. But like you said, we know that the Germans had already been there for New Schwabenland. Was that it?
Schwabenland.
Yeah. New Schwabenland.
Mm-hmm. Or else they called it something else too, didn't they?
It's new Birchbaggen, yeah, or something like that.
So we know that they were already there collecting their oil and whatnot. But at the same time, there are talks of like, remember when we talked about this a while ago, but the Ananurbra, remember them? Like the kind of Himmler's scientific / occult, SS organization that he had set up. But they've sent them to Antarctica previously, right? And we... Oh man, what the hell is it called? What the old Ottoman map, the Perry Reese map, right? So they have that
Antarctica without ice.
Yeah, and it shows like the perfect coastline of Antarctica without ice. And a lot of people speculate that like that's where they got, you know, that was actually the home of Atlantis, which could have been an advanced civilization, which explains why the Nazis went there in the first place, because the Ananurbra, these were the same guys. These are basically the Nazis from Indiana Jones were out looking for Mjolnir and, you know, the Ark of the Covenant and whatnot.
All the crazy, like outlandish weapons, right?
Totally.
The one thing that I will say on the, like that Nazi front, one last thing that's interesting in the, when we're in the context of looking at Operation High Jump, what happened is like you said, Andrew, the Nazis were there. They did some New Schwabenland and stuff, and very similar to Operation High Jump. They turned and boogied back home. Like something, you know, the official narrative is the war broke out and they were like, hey, we have to get back. But if you look at the mission and what the Nazis were supposed to be doing in Antarctica, it's like they abruptly stopped too and headed back for Germany. And that makes me think of like, well, maybe there was something more to these. There was some sort of discovery made there that would pique the interest. Because again, I just can't get over the fact of when you're like, this is like such a huge scientific mission. If like, if that's what you're going with, you're like, what do you need a fucking F-15 or whatever they flew in World War II for science? You know, like, we're gonna see what the missiles do when we fucking shoot them in the ice. Yeah. Like it's overkill, really. Well,
I mean, it's overkill in a way, but if you really look into it more, a little deeper, so they're going there for pretty much because these are the last two places on Earth, the Arctic and Antarctic, that haven't really been claimed and exploited for resources. So they're thinking like, okay, we're going to test out our long distance radio communication, like over horizon radio. And how do our air operations, how do they do over ice? All that kind of stuff, kind of like setting up an advanced like military force in order to exploit these places for resources. So you're like, oh, okay, well, I mean, sure. But yeah, after it was 2 months, you're fucking hightailing it out of there.
It was, like Zell's saying, it's like, it was more, it's not just about science. It was a logistical exercise. It was like 13 ships. I mean, people don't realize sometimes that it's like an aircraft carrier. It never goes by itself. It has like six or seven ships that go with it. Like you have your destroyers, you have your support ships, you have your freighters, whatever. Most of these things, you'd have your refueling ships.
Did you work on? Sorry,
I worked on the USS Blue Ridge.
What kind of ship is that though?
It's a communications platform ship.
But that'd be one of the ships probably in the Armada or what?
Not that one. I think that class of ship, like they don't make them anymore, but they those were like in the 60s and stuff that mainly for coordinating communications, like facilitating communications between in the fleet, like fleet wide. So
Dan just giving up state secrets. Right.
You can look it up on Wikipedia. So I'm like, that's all you can pretty much pull. The ship was like in the ship is so old. Like it's one of the, my ship was the oldest commissioned ship besides the USS Constitution, which is the sail ship parked in Boston. Like it's an old boat. Nothing really secret about it. But yeah. So like as far as like 13 ships, like being a large amount of ships, it's like, of those 13, I don't know if that includes also like you need icebreakers out there.
For sure.
There's some accounts and we might've mentioned it, but it's like, you can watch the official documentary. What is it? The Secret Land or whatever that they made while they were down there. They made an entire documentary on the expedition itself. It's like from the 40s. There's some accounts actually that like they had icebreakers out there that needed to go out and move these ships. And it was like, there's one account of like a U-boat getting stuck and they actually had to use another ship to like push it out, which doesn't surprise me. Like it's being down there. It's like, you think Antarctica is just cold, but it's cold and wind and like constant wind
and nothing barren and, wasteland.
Yeah.
So, I was
just going to say really quick, like, you're talking about like logistic stuff and then, you know, obviously we just entered, you know, the Cold War with Russia. So possibly we're thinking like we might need to prepare to go to war with Russia. And I'm wondering if maybe the harsh climate, right, can kind of mimic Russia. Obviously Russia's not as cold, but you got to think at some point, like the Americans would have been wise to why the Germans failed, right? They failed getting spread too thin, going into Russia, freezing to death, all that type of stuff. So I'm wondering if that's like, fuck, that's not going to happen to us. We're going to be prepared if we do have to put boots on the ground in Russia.
I mean, they probably should just came to Canada to do it then.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, probably they could have just, yeah, a little easier. The one argument that I would say of like, okay, well, maybe this was out of an abundance of caution, because like I think about World War II and like, what was that, like that one island where the Japanese like didn't know they had surrendered for like years after the war? You guys hear about that? I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, there was at least a couple of those where they had, like they were at war there. They thought like 1 or 6 months, 8 months after the war had ended or something.
Yeah, and people like trying to go. They're like, whoa, you surrendered. They're like, we didn't. Right. Like, I wonder if it's one of those things that it's like, they're like, okay, well maybe, you know, we have all these reports of, you know, U-boats fleeing to Argentina. Should we be cautious that there is still some U-boats out there that maybe aren't friendly and would cause an issue? You know what
or
I mean?
Maybe like, there's an entire base.
Yeah.
Base 211.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been rough for a U-boat to operate that long after the end of the war. Like having a U-boat, like it had to maintain an entire fleet of those ships. It's just being like, it's hard for me to conceive.
Dude, submarines at that era before like they went like with like a nuclear power. Ridiculous. How much it was just like run on like diesel generators. They had to charge batteries so they could dive under the water for like 40 minutes and that's all they got. And then they'd come back up. Like,
they couldn't even go down that far either. No. They couldn't even go down really that far. Their operational depths were really not that deep. And these ships and like Andrew's saying that, yeah, operating in those cold weathers is like, this was pre, you know, ICBM technology when eventually it's going to be like, you know, we don't need ships in the Arctic because we're just going to be launching missiles at each other, like a full flown naval invasion of the Arctic or fighting in the Arctic, with ships would have been incredibly difficult. And as they found out, because it's like cold weather on ships and planes, like, you know, you're constantly having to be out there, you know, chipping away ice. Like, I'm sure it takes a mental toll too, because you're just like, you got to suit up every time you want to go on the, you got to go topside on your boat, and you're like just chipping off ice off the planes to make sure they don't explode when they take off.
I can't even wrap my head around that.
And then there were like, what was it? That one plane crash we did mention, that was one of the recorded casualties, is like, they said that like they were flying in a blizzard, like while they were doing, I guess they were doing surveying, and I guess they had an unusual amount of fuel on there for what it was.
It's a weird way to say they were shot down by an alien.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, yeah, operating out of those.
We crashed because we had too much fuel.
Yeah, it's the thing is like, with the, if the Nazis did have a base down there, and Braden and I kind of discussed this on the confidential, but it's like, yeah, you would definitely need a type of advanced technology to keep your shit running. You would need some kind of, you know, if you're, whether you're powering your base, and your Nazi robot suits, and, your Hanubu, was it 4 5s? the flying saucers. It would be something like that. One of the things that I found really interesting was the actual, cause I think, Andrew mentioned this before, not just Atlantis, but the Hollow Earth theory seems to overlap a little bit into this. There's an actual,
oh yeah,
there's a document that's been circulating for a while. I put it in the notes. There's a, their little link in the notes in there, but it's like an actual, it's a document that is the kind of like, it's claimed to be like the procedures or the protocols for Nazi U-boats to access the entry into Agartha, which is a, you know, as far as we know, a mythical city, within the center of the earth.
Inner earth.
Yeah. Or it could have been just what the Nazis called their base, which would be a pretty tight name for a underground base.
Yeah. The
doesn't
Nazis
sound foreboding enough. Like, the Nazis have such a good way of coming up with fucking gangster names.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Glocka.
Yeah, man.
I mean, okay, that's a perfect segue into, because one of the main people in the story is Admiral Richard Byrd.
Rear Admiral, Zell.
Rear Admiral?
Come on.
Yeah.
My
respect
bad.
Respect on it.
Fucking
yeah,
idiot.
Like the most decorated Navy man in the history of America.
And I guess he was he not?
Like, second to Dan, maybe.
Did he not have like a whole, like, chest full of medals, that this guy was like the real deal?
No, he was the one, like, I wasn't joking. He's like the most decorated Navy man of all time.
So this is kind of where the story takes a little turn here. So upon retreating from their mission, Operation High Jump, I guess he gives an interview in Chile, and he's like, pretty much says that, where's the note here?
I had basically a warning.
He said, what did he say? He said, what, the next war might be fought against aircraft that can travel from pole to pole at incredible speeds. And then people are like, what? So did he, is he just anticipating the future, or is that part of the battle that was fought, which caused him to retreat against possibly like some type of alien craft, inner earth, advanced society, flying saucer, something that ran on propulsion completely different than we knew?
I mean, the Nazis did have like they had their special, he worked on all their special projects, Hans Kammler, and he came up with the JU-390, which was one of the fastest and most, and could travel the furthest distances planes, like right at the end of the war. And so the Nazis did have capabilities of like traveling, you know, further than the current technologies. And what's interesting about this Hans Kammler guy is right at the end of World War II went, like, no one could find him. He was unaccounted for, and so was his plane, and there was only two in existence. And you think about it, you're like, you need advanced technology to run a base, right? Or you need to fucking ship everything in constantly, and you need planes that can travel over long distances. And maybe Hans Kammler was utilizing that JU-390.
What's it's interesting too, because like that, you know, on that topic, Annie Jacobson has a book, Area 51. It's phenomenal read if you like conspiracy stuff. But one of her things is that the Russians when, you know, during Operation Paperclip and stuff, when we were grabbing the rocket guys, the Soviets did the same thing, but they were grabbing
Operation Osvaykin.
Yeah. And they were grabbing propulsion guys, right? And aircraft guys. And there's these like fabled twins who had all these designs out of Germany. They went missing, never to be seen from again after the war. And it's kind of theorized that the Russians kind of snagged all these guys up and a lot of their plane tech. So it's like they kind of had some like pretty wild ideas for like futuristic, like aerospace designs that we've never seen before, and just that never saw the light of day. So is it possible that like he, because again, they, when you look at this case before everything we're getting into now, you can chalk it up to like, oh yeah, it's this or that. But when you look at Operation High Jump as like a precursor, and then you look at like all these other branches that go into different aspects of the conspiracy world, it starts to paint a bigger picture to me. And this is like Admiral Byrd giving this warning is one of them, with the losses. And then him all of a sudden stating like, hey, like, you know, we're going to, you know, there's going to be a new threat of enemy aircraft that can go pole to pole at insane speeds. Because if you look at, you know, one of our other favorite guys, Bob Lazar, and what he says, and his accounts are working at Area 51, you know, he says they've recovered some crafts, and they've also, in, you know, that throwaway comment in the Rogan interview, he says they've dug some up.
Excavated some.
Yeah. Excavated some.
And then so no one else asked any questions about it.
Yeah, it's insane.
We're all like, what the fuck?
But part of me wonders if like he's saying this because they've recovered something, right? Like maybe they were in a, like some sort of aerial assault with something, whether that thing was, I mean, cause we had the Foo Fighters in World War II and different other things, but like, is it possible that they were having run-ins with, you know, some kind of flying saucer and they took heavy losses trying to catch these things in blizzards, and these things are flying, you know, if they're transmediums going in and out of the water, they have no luck, but they get one or they find one. And they bring it back. So now it's like, that's kind of where my brain goes with Admiral Byrd giving this warning, is like, I'm like, that's someone who's seen something.
Well, right? When like, a guy with that many medals and that much authority speaks, you listen. Like, what happened? If he's the best of the best and his fucking armada gets taken down and has to retreat in 2 months.
Yeah, that's gotta be warning. They were supposed to be there for 6 months.
6 months?
Yeah.
I mean, like, think about cool. how much like, that would cost to move all that shit there, and then have to be like in a month, be like, oh, gotta fucking
yeah. And that's one of the reasons that was given, that why they did come back early, is because they were like, this is too expensive. I mean, well, as far as
half of that, maybe.
More like, yeah, like American.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown score second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Bureaucracy or politics, it was like, even that time, like, they were already calling it out. They're like, this is just a waste of money. Like, you didn't need to send that many personnel down
scientists.
Well, it's like, they, most of the ships, like Brayden said, these were combat ready ships, but yeah, these are a lot of ships that were, that hadn't been, were probably might have actually been scheduled for decommission and within the recent future from that date. Because it's like, yeah, the United States had pretty much, we were standing down from being at war, and you don't need such a large fleet. So some of these ships were probably going to be heading for mothballs. But yeah, it's like that was one of the reasons, you know, official reasons stating that they came back so early, was that, yeah, it's too expensive. Also February, like they hit February and it was getting way colder than they had anticipated. Like, I guess
it's getting colder than cold.
That's their summer, right? Because it doesn't get winter there till like June or July.
Yeah. And I mean, they're saying it was getting colder.
Admiral earlier. Bird's like, what do you mean? This is as warm as it gets.
Get me the White House.
Like,
yeah. We get down there and we're like, wait, like everybody's got like, you know, they just weren't, you know, they weren't prepared for how cold it was going to be. And nobody really had been down there for long periods of time operating on ships. Most of the times it's like you establish a base, like the most efficient way to get around down there was like dog sleds. You know, it's like that was like the preferred way to like get around. It's like the easiest way. And then you're trying to operate like complicated machinery down there, like planes and stuff that, you know, even though they are tough war planes, they're still like pieces of machinery that is like, yeah, it's highly susceptible to being frozen and just being like, this freaking sucks. You know, and it's like everywhere that you go, I can imagine that you're just worried about your ship hitting an iceberg or just being like having to get through ice to get anywhere.
Well, I mean, just a quick point on like the cold of the time. So they've gone in summer, obviously. You could never go in winter. Your ships wouldn't make it. So they're in February. They're peak summer of Antarctica. So the sun, I mean, I don't know how.
They got exactly 23 minutes of sunlight.
No matter where they are, the sun at the most, you get no darkness at all. And at the least, the sun's like barely dipping over the horizon. So never, it's not like it's the middle of, if it's middle of winter Antarctica, it makes sense. You're like, okay, we're going to go to Antarctica. We're going to see how we can brave the cold for going to Russia or whatever the scenario.
How well
does our equipment work in the cold? But in the summer, I mean, I'm sure it's getting cold, but it's not minus 70 or something. Like, it's not crazy Antarctica.
Like, it's not Russian winter.
No, it's not. You're in the winter there. Like, summer in the Arctic and Antarctica, I mean, it's especially like where they are, like near the coast and stuff, that sea ice breaks apart, lots of icebergs and whatever, but the actual like coldness, it's not like frigid, bitter cold, I would imagine. It's probably freezing. It's probably still freezing more or less here or there, but it's not minus, it's not freezing your ship solid.
So the argument of that, like, falls flat for you if they're like, they're training for like Russian combat.
Well, I mean, the ice though, like.
You could do that up here. You could do that in Canada.
That's what I mean. So
you can do that in Alaska.
I understand that we're allies, but at the same time, you have to like inform another country what you're doing.
Not Canada. Right? You walk all over us up here.
No, not back then. We were badass back then.
It's true. We were punching above our weight back then. Now we're bending over the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Proudly presenting ass.
Yeah, we got our elbows.
High on war crimes from World War One still.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Per capita, Canada has the most war crimes.
The problem is you guys forgot about our war crimes, Dan.
Yeah.
Not afraid to do it.
So did we.
Yeah. Buddy, we go for the nuts. Eyes, nuts, soft spots, whatever.
Neck.
Oh, yeah.
Neck.
Good job. Adam's apple crush.
Geneva who?
But that's who's Geneva? We don't even know who that is.
Geneva what?
That's not the only thing about Admiral Byrd though, right, Zell? Like there's other things about him and his accounts of that makes this interesting.
Well, he had a journal, didn't he?
So Admiral Byrd did leave a journal. And in that journal, so goes the tale, is he talked about as he was flying over the pole that the weather seemed to change and the ice seemed to give way to rock and then to grass. And all of a sudden, by God, that's a mammoth. And he is entered like a different realm as he flew over the pole. And people interpret that of saying he must have entered the Hollow Earth. Like he fucking went in.
There's an event right from the core of the earth.
He somehow didn't realize where he was going. His instruments weren't working now, and now he just flew into it. Didn't even notice. And it gets even crazier. He lands. At one time, he's approached by like advanced aircraft that kind of like
surround
his wings and like guide him down and make him force him to land. And he meets. We don't know if they're alien. They meet a species that's not human. And they start to talk to him about how humans are not ready for atomic power and atomic weapons. And we have to change our ways. And they've tried to help us in the past, but they were shot at during the war and it wasn't safe. We're putting all our trust in you, Admiral Byrd.
Oddly enough, these saucers also had swastikas on them, supposedly.
Grave swastikas on the hull.
Well, I mean, first off, on that point, so I love how you manned it up a little bit and called it a journal, because everywhere online you read it says diary.
It's a journal, and, right? It's a satchel.
That's a gay thing.
Admiral Byrd carried a journal and a satchel, not a diary.
Dear diary, today I met some new friends. Like when I read that, I'm just like, okay, all right. It doesn't make any sense. I was like, 40s of like, you know, were men carrying diaries? Doubtful. But then I started thinking it from a military standpoint. I'm like, I mean, I wonder if it's something like law enforcement where they kept notebooks, right? Like where they kept logs and notes of captain's each and logs. Every day, right? Captain's logs.
We're at right? Like, why? Log.
Well, I right? think this and is his personal one. This one, like, I mean, Admiral Byrd is like, we said he is the most decorated thing, but he decorated, you know, military record, but he also has a, you know, exploration record under his belt. Like he was one of the first people to fly over the poles and stuff.
That's right.
Like, that's a fucking pioneer of journaling.
And that
diary. The first diary before it was only for women. he bridged the gap.
And that journal or diary, passed. Like that was recovered from his effects. Like I can't remember what the whole story behind it. Like was it a family member who got it? Like
His son, after his death, was passed a journal, and this journal contained all this stuff. And it was son, years, like notes years from after this his
from this mission.
A son who also mysteriously passed away right after exposing this journal.
Did he really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
He's That's looking it up.
It's already done.
Did I just make a wild claim?
No, I'm fucking serious.
He read it somewhere. I saw a meme that said, showed the diary.
2 minutes. Okay. Richard Evelyn Byrd III died in 1988.
Byrd III? Oh my God, man.
Died in 1988. His body was found in a vacant warehouse, and the medical examiner reported malnutrition and dehydration as a cause of death.
He was fucking...
He was tortured in a fucking warehouse. Tortured and
starved.
Like, that's weird. Like, what else did he have? Like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe what other information journals. Did he get left?
They wanted him to recount everything from the journals and be like, you made it up. Tell him it's fucking fake. And they waterboarded him and starved him.
Hey, I mean, you tell the truth, man. You get off.
It's interesting to he passes away so soon after releasing these diaries. But like it is like when you look at that and you're like, hey, he has these private diaries where he describes these things. And then in like, if you pair that with his like warning, you're like, okay, maybe this guy did see some shit. That's why he's writing this stuff. As for Zell, you said the saucers had insignia on them. Part of me has always wondered is if the Nazis were the first ones to make contact with, if this is another species, another inhabitants of Earth that, you know, lives in the hollow Earth or whatever. I wonder if it's something like the Nazis met them first and were like, you need to help us. Like we're at war and we need your assistance to win the war. And they're like, yeah, hell yeah. Right. You're first people to come in. We're friends now. And then like the Americans came, we fought them for a little bit. And then we broke bread and they're like, ooh, the Nazis are bad. They're like trying to scrape off the insignias. They're like, ooh. Right? Like, we didn't know. They were the first ones met. So we heard their first story
the
first.
The aliens just put a swastika on their craft because they're like, these guys are cool.
Yeah, that's well, cool, yeah. It's yeah, cool. Yeah.
Well, I think like the Nazis you know when like in like Predator, when the Predator fucking teams up with the human and he gives her the mark? You know what I mean? Like, that's what the Nazis were doing. Like, yeah, this is what we got for you.
A lot of people forget, like the Nazis adopted the swastika. Like right. it wasn't they didn't create it, right? They you know, it's all the
they
way
changed
they
aimed, it, didn't they?
Yeah, the way the they angle is it. And the way you know, they flipped it over. It's different.
For all we know, they got it from there.
But that's what I'm saying. I was like, that's what I was, you know, implying.
It's with your theory
from them.
That's what I mean. Like, because you think about it, like instead of them joining up with this race, I'd like to think more so of like discovering abandoned technology and like reverse engineering it, making their own. And that's why like bringing that Hans Kammler guy, right? You bring them in there and you start utilizing whatever they find because, yes, this was an ancient advanced civilization, possibly, you know, Atlantis, and they got the Atlantean. Because didn't they believe, like, wasn't it the Thule Society that had found, like, a lot of the members were founding members of the Nazi Party, and they believed that there was an Aryan race, and that was Atlantis?
Something like that, pretty much.
I'm mashing a bunch of fucking shit together.
No, I mean,
that's what they did.
They went on the fact that this Aryan race was their race that they thought was the best because they were from, it was like Atlantis or something like that, a different species that existed here before, or maybe was still from
Atlantis
here.
Or Hyperborea, like they.
Hyperborea and Lemuria and all this like that, like ancient stuff, like ancient war, they said. There was like Atlantis versus Lemuria and Hyperborea and all these crazy stuff. And they said that these Aryans reached out to them and said, like, here's the torch, boys. Like, fucking go for it, I guess. Like, that's what they thought. They're like, all right, well, like, they had white skin, so.
You think they'd, like, go to Sweden or something, right?
Yeah, way more white and blonde up there.
Looks like they're in ABBA.
The other thing is, too, I'm like, when I'm looking at this case and I'm thinking about it, I'm like, you look at the timeline of events in this. 46, 47, they hightail it back. They come back, so, like, you have Admiral Byrd's warning, his diaries that he wrote, like maybe something happened. And then what kicks off in 47? Like the most famous UFO flaps of all time. You have like Kenneth Arnold, you have Roswell, right? Like you have some of the biggest cases in UFOlogy happen almost immediately after Operation High Jump returns. And then to make things weirder for me, again, you kind of have to magnify the scope of Operation High Jump. 1948, they signed treaties to not go. They're like, hey, listen.
Oh, yeah. That's the craziest part about
this. Hey, listen. Hey, boys, let's get all the countries together. All right. No one's going to Antarctica. All right.
It's too cold.
Deal.
Too cold. I don't want to go there. You don't want to go there. Nobody can go there.
None of us. All right. Everyone signed. Everyone good. Everyone's like, yeah. All right. All good. And they signed the fucking, what is it? The Antarctic Treaty in August 1948 it's placed under the guardianship of the United Nations and it be administered by a group of claimant nations. And like no one, you know, does anything solo over it, you know, and it's highly regulated. And you're like, when you look at, like, if you just look at all these things separately, you know, it doesn't really seem too weird to me. But when I look at all these things in conjunction of looking at Operation High Jump and what it kicks off, I'm going like, did these motherfuckers actually find something in Antarctica? Because sure. The timeline of events makes me feel like they found something. UFOs were coming to the United States because they recovered something. That's what I think. That's what I feel, is that they recovered something. All of a sudden there's this huge UFO flap of them trying to either come back. Like, it's like ants when you kill an ant and then all the ants come looking for their fucking dead ant buddy. Right. Dude,
I
love it.
Pilot thing. Like, we're using the technology that we got there. Reverse engineering. And that's test. Like, we're testing it out.
Let's UFO dig into flap. It. So here it is. Put it together. So first, the Germans get down there.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back a little bit, hold that thought. Okay. It was, so the Thule Society, it was what gave rise to the Nazi Party in the end. It was like, that was the next thing.
The inner circle of
that. Yeah, but it was the Vril Society, which is like the legend, the occult side of the Nazi Party, which was founded before the war and stuff. And they said that they were like a group of mediums who would channel beings from a different place. And they call, there was a, here, I had a note here somewhere. The Aldebaran from a different star system. And they could harness what called like the Vril energy. And the Vril energy what gave rise to the craft and the stuff. So if we go with that, maybe this, they knew of this. So in Antarctica, there is a frozen craft from a different civilization, from Atlantis, let's say, some prior civilization that
right next to a few pyramids, some other structures.
Maybe make pyramids and stuff, exactly. And that, for whatever reason, they are extinct, but their technology lives. And during their excavations down there, the Germans found a craft and they started reverse engineering and they were getting it. And then at the end of the war, paperclip happens. Some of the Germans, they don't defect, they're forcibly brought over pretty much, but they spill the beans like, oh yeah, the secret's down there. Operation High Jump, flying saucers. It all makes sense like that. Like that was the prior civilization. We'll do a reverse on the younger Dryas at one other time. Yeah.
Holy, I saw your mic bump up there when you said that.
Anyways, so that makes so much sense. So start reverse engineering or just if they're frozen, maybe if when you freeze something, I mean, you preserve it, right? So maybe they're still working. You fucking heat it up. It's metal that doesn't rust. It's some super advanced alloys and stuff. You heat it up, you get on the ship in the hangar, you crouch in there because the people are 3 feet, 4 feet tall, and it like reads your brain and it just comes alive. And all of a sudden they figure it out.
Yeah, and all of a sudden your dogs are turning into weird aliens and like screaming at you, and you got to set them on fire, and just like everything's, people's heads are crawling around on the ceiling, and just like, yeah, not fun.
But it's like Brayden said, because right after that,
we got to turn around.
It's Kenneth Arnold sees those first UFOs, and then it's Roswell, and then it's like bingo, bango, bongo, all these fucking events right in a row immediately around this time.
Yeah, and then it's like you look, like, so Roswell, obviously they think they recovered crafts and you know, beings. And then it's like 48, they all decide that, hey, we're not going back to, like, you know, we shouldn't make claim to Antarctica. It should be a group thing. And you're kind of like, it's just a weird timeline of events. So I kind of subscribe to the fact that they found something there, whether or not it was running, and they, cause I have a hard time believing that they would have fucking dusted anything. Like, I think any, like, even if we look at the like recent UFO like flaps like of today, where it's like, you know, they, that one that got hit with a Hellfire missile that just got released, that footage, and it's just like ding, like nothing, like no big deal. Like, I just have a hard time believing that like tech from then would have taken something down. So I do believe they got heavy losses. Like Dan was saying, it's like, this is a fucking difficult mission. They're breaking ice. Shit's breaking. None of this works. But I think they went down there to recover something that the Nazis had originally found. And then when they recover it, and like Zell said, you get it back, you start turning things on. I think it starts sending signals, ooh, right? And then things are coming. The flap starts because they're like, hey, this turned on. Like,
it's Alien, right, versus it's, Predator.
It's sending a fucking distress. They're sending
signals to the Nazi moon base.
Well, it makes sense why they would, like, you, if you found something like that, you wouldn't be like, hey, well, we're here for another 6 months, so let's just fucking keep looking.
Yeah,
it's,
you'd
like,
be
no,
like,
no, we found this, secure the fucking goods, GTFO. Gotta get the fuck out of there, right?
But like, then when you, in the context of like, you, okay, say they do find a saucer and they're bringing a saucer back, and then that presser in Chile where he's like, there's going to be crafts that can fly pole to pole. It's like, because he's fucking got one. He's seen it.
He knows.
He's got this thing fucking in the back. Do I believe his little diary that he fucking flew and they all flew beside him? I mean, it does have some hallmarks of it. Fuck no, dude. That the guy was playing around with sci-fi. Fake. He was bored as fuck. There was no TV back then on the boats. He was just bored as hell, probably making up stories.
We don't even think it's him. We know that the diary is
false.
I mean, he had a diary and he did explain his polar navigation and stuff in the North Pole, but the diary that we're talking about is kind of like, they just take some of that stuff, they turn it around, and they add in the mammoths and the aliens. There's no actual, like, no one ever found that book. That's not a real book, unfortunately. I wish it was.
I think the whole thing is like, they got down, why they left early is because they got down there and they underestimated the efficiency of Billy Blazkowicz, BJ Blazkowicz. He'd already taken out Castle Wolfenstein, and he got down there. He's like, I don't need 6 months. I need 4 weeks. Clear him out. He got in there, blew shit out of it. He's like, we can go home. We're done.
Well, okay, I got half the reference because I remember Castle Wolfenstein.
Yeah, I had to put that next to you guys wouldn't get it.
That's the other point is like, maybe there was like a Nazi holdout there, like in Antarctica. Like they, you know, maybe there was a base, and what they were doing was like, this would make more sense actually now that I'm thinking about it. If there was a Nazi base 211, right, which is theorized, it's like they found something and they were working on excavating even to this day. Like after the war, there was a crew there that their job was, they were trying to pull this stuff out of the ice. So then when the fucking US rolls effort up
to win the war, get this
right
thing out,
yeah, they're like, yeah, even if it's over, they're like, no, we're like, this is important. what we find here could change everything. Like, even though we've lost and we're getting messages that we've given up, like if we pull this stuff out, like it could change everything. Doesn't matter. And like USA rolls in and, you know, maybe they do have a little battle and then they take this research facility and then be like, hey, there's something partially excavated. We're going to pull it out of the ice and turn and burn. Like, and get back, because like they lose the amount of like aircrafts that are reported losses and like the reported, you know, if you look at the high end, I mean, the high end's insane, 1,000 people, but it's like, you know, something obviously more than just the cold got them, because again, like Zell said, this is summer there.
Summertime,
it's not like fucking, they weren't wearing t-shirts on the deck, but
it might have been,
it's not,
it's warm.
But yeah, that's, I agree. True. I agree. It's like it's the cold is not, I think, is the least of your problems. It's, I mean, it's probably,
it's the Nazis there waiting for you.
It's the Nazis.
Well, it's like, alien, you know, predator. Like, we know that the Nazis were more interested, like they were interested more than just the fucking whale oil or whatever, right? Like, we know that the Annenberg had a special interest in Antarctica. Himmler sent them all across the world looking for stuff. I don't know why he would stop at Antarctica. Right? Like, they were in the desert. The desert can be just as fucking treacherous for other reasons, right? So I fully believe that they, like, the Annenberg didn't find, you know, the Holy Grail. They didn't find Mjolnir. They didn't find, I think Spirit they found Destiny. Something. They didn't find the Spirit of Destiny. I think they found something in Antarctica.
Found a craft?
They found something. Well, it just,
I can't,
like, it ties into that fucking, it
starts everything.
Well, like, that could be Atlantis. We have no idea how, you know, how thick is the ice there? What, you know, there have been people,
thick.
Well, and there's people that have seen, like, you look at the topography and stuff, and they're like, that looks like a structure. That looks like that could be a pyramid. Like, they're very well. Are there not, like, pyramids on every single continent other than Antarctica that we know of?
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Like, so
at least pyramidal mounds on every continent for sure.
Occam's razor. There's fucking,
dude, there's, and on that note, actually, there. Because with his name, Charles Hapgood, he's the guy who, you know, way back proposed a crustal displacement theory, where like the rapid shifting of the crust would just trigger, like, because right now on Earth, we know like the crust of the Earth, the actual like landmass, is mainly on the one side, and then the Pacific Ocean is kilometers deep, and it's so the Earth is slightly unbalanced, you would say, as it spins. And his theory was, every once in a while, for whatever reason, because the crust is floating on molten rock, the crust would like do a quick boop, a quick shift, and then it would plunge the world into chaos. Because if you're all of a sudden you're 8 degrees north or whatever from where you were, and we do, I mean, and a lot of people have debunked that theory. Well, it's never happened, obviously, so it's hard to really understand if that does happen. But we do know, for some reason, mammoths in the Arctic tundra have been flash frozen with food in their mouth. Dead. Frozen solid.
Yeah, it's fucking wild.
It's crazy.
And no one really knows what happened to that. That's like, oh, it must have been like a volcanic eruption, dropped the temperature.
Ice. Tomorrow scenario. It's,
yeah, but like,
Jake Gyllenhaal and
yeah. But we know like that has
polar
happened.
Bomb,
like,
ice bomb.
Yeah, like, yeah, like a flash freezing for whatever, like these animals just die with food in their mouth. Somehow,
like chewing.
So if you go with the theory of like Atlantis, let's say, some hyper advanced place, and maybe it was Antarctica, and maybe Antarctica was shifted a bit, and then the whole fucking, it slipped out, and all of a sudden that's all frozen solid and flash frozen. So all that technology, and it's all under the ice now. I've heard that theory presented a bunch of times. I'm like, well, who knows? Because I mean, it happened to mammoths. Maybe he's got maybe some fucking little alien grays, which was like the evolution of humans. It wasn't even humans. It was like a new like hominid, like a branch that had fucking got away from or something.
Yetis.
But who knows? Yeah. Bigfoot and the Yetis are the remaining of them.
Yeah. That makes sense. That's why the Yeti lives in the Himalayas. Like, that's where the Annenberg were hanging out. Like, they went in there studying the...
Charles Hapgood, in his book about crustal displacement, was endorsed by Albert Einstein.
Who, here we go.
Hey, Einstein.
He's a smart guy.
Right? Smart guy.
Yeah. It's interesting. I like that theory. I like that something
that, like, the Yetis are Yeah, you know, he's that, the alien. Yeah, I like that. I really like that.
No, just the fact that it's like, I mean, who are we to say that there could, like, it's such a big landmass. It's such a big landmass that's unexplored. And you have like, you think about, like, we've just discovered, like, Göbekli Tepe. We're finding stuff under the pyramids right now. It's like, we're finding so much new stuff right now to say that, like, there can't be anything on this fucking giant ball of ice, even though there's fucking ancient texts and maps with it, with no ice, you know, like, to say that there's nothing there. At least the coastline,
no ice.
Yeah. Coastline, right? You're like, it's such a weird thing that, you know, just it's a weird unknown that, like, at this day and age, we still know so little about what's under the ice in Antarctica.
Like how far can you penetrate the ice? Like, it's legit kilometers thick. Like, it's fucking crazy.
Like, how does that work with LIDAR? That, does that, like, fuck it up? I don't know. I don't stuff know that
they, what did they use for the Pyramids of Giza? Was that LIDAR?
Ground penetrating LIDAR?
It was a type of radar. I wonder SAR, if they use that in Antarctica.
Didn't they use that gluon one or two or whatever? That Mulan,
I can't remember.
One something. That was the one they used.
They used, like, synthetic aperture radar. That's what, so SAR. So it's very similar to LIDAR, but I guess it can penetrate the ground deeper, so they say. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Braden nailed it. I mean, we're just starting to find some of the stuff because we have the technology to find it. Now they're mapping, like, the Amazon, and they're like, millions of people lived here. Millions.
Yeah, like, pyramids everywhere. Millions that tree there, that's like a pyramid.
It's crazy, well, man.
Because the jungle's a crazy spot, too, because in 20 years, the jungle will take over an entire city. Like, it's just
gone.
Like, it's buried in trees and growth.
Well, it just, like, cover over stuff. Cause it's like, what is it? Like, Tenochtitlan? And those places, like, those were covered over in decades. Yeah. Like, it was, like, completely covered in dirt. When you excavate these pyramids, like, yeah, they're just big mounds, like, covered in dirt. When you see where they originally found them, and then they're, like, 20 years later after they finish it, it's like, yeah, you know, you can actually see the pyramid.
Chichen Itza and Teotihuacan, and those, like the Mexican pyramids.
Yeah.
Just looked like hills with trees on them. And then someone, like, started digging and hit a stone. They're like, oh, what's that? And then, like, oh shit, it's a fucking amazing piece of architecture here.
I have no doubt in my mind that if you start utilizing this technology just about anywhere on earth, you're going to uncover stuff. Because, like, you know, the jungle in 20 years, but, like, anywhere, like, even the Sahara, those sand dunes fucking move. Right. And it's like, you know, given a space of time, like, who knows what's buried under the fucking sand, right? Like, the wind blows it just slowly, like, drifts. So
the
it's
whales,
like,
I wonder, it's
the whales, right? Dude. You heard, yeah. You know, the whales in the desert? No. So there's this whale bone strewn across the desert.
It's fucking insane.
So it used to be an ocean of some kind.
So you're
sure
telling me there's
giant worms?
Are you telling me there's giant eagles that are lifting up whales?
I say no to no theories anymore. I'm fucking all
sandworms for sure.
Could be.
That's interesting because, like, that would make sense. That, like, that kind of sands, like, would be like an ocean bed.
Well, go back to Atlantis. They say, like, the eye of the Sahara was Atlantis as well. That's a big theory.
The Ricot structure.
Is it? Yeah, the Ricot structure. It's like, is it Plato's fucking map? Somebody's map puts Atlantis.
Well, Plato is the one who is, like, the only, like, historical record of a place called Atlantis 9,000 years before he was alive. So that's like 12,000 years ago or something.
Crazy.
I mean, who knows about that? But I mean, we'll get into another time. But also the sea levels. Right now, like, 80% of the world's population is within, like, 200 feet of the sea level. So and sea levels have rose 500 feet in the last 10,000 years. So 80% of our civilization would be underwater if that happened again.
It's crazy.
Like, all the most major cities are either on the coast or on, like, a river delta, like the mouth, and that would all flood. It would be gone.
And then, like, salt water is really good with preserving stuff, right?
Yeah.
I have no idea, actually. Is it better or worse? No,
I'm pretty sure it just eats everything.
Yeah. Unless it's super cold.
Yeah.
It's extremely cold.
I mean, stone, though, if you had stone structure, wouldn't matter.
Yeah, then it would
be covered in barnacles and coral. And
I guess, like, our current way of building things isn't built to last.
Concrete's porous, it'd eventually break apart, and who knows?
Steel would rust.
Anyways, in the end, Operation High Jump is obviously was a fucking real operation. Mm-hmm. The Admiral Byrd stuff in the Hollow Earth and stuff is potentially fabricated. for modern enjoyment. But all the other stuff, like all the UFOs and
Nazis
stuff.
Nazis were working with the Yetis.
We know this now. Yetis were the builders of Atlantis. Makes
just
sense.
Just the time. I mean, look at the timeline of events. You look at the timeline of events for yourself of like, broaden the scope from Operation High Jump. Look at the UFO. Like, if you like UFOs, it all fucking kicks off. Everything you love about UFOs kicks off right after Operation High Jump.
And, right? The one thing we know for sure is the government lies. So whatever reasons they told you that they were going, bullshit.
Well, at this time, I'm not too sure, but as the Cold War progresses, the lies start fucking flying. They are crazy. Now we'll get to more of that. But that's it for this week. On this episode, we're going to take a break. If you're watching live, we're going to go to the new style of show, Unhinged, where we take calls, texts, talk about whatever we want. If you got a question about High Jump, you want to make fun of Braden?
You got a theory.
You call in. But for now, we're going to take a short break. We'll catch you guys on Unhinged. We'll be right back.
Picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM. Make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.